Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Melanie Ferris, and I work at Wilder Research, which is a nonprofit research organization based out of St. Paul, Minnesota. We're the research arm of an operational foundation called the Amherst H. Wilder Foundation, which serves primarily the East Metro, so St. Paul and some suburbs there. And today I'll be talking to you about two studies that we did for the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation, looking at health inequities in the Twin Cities region. And the Twin Cities, as I'm referring to, is Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding suburban and rural areas in the six-county region. So it includes some very densely populated areas as well as, you know, farmland. So a pretty diverse area. I have no disclosures to report. We set off to do this study to look at whether there are health inequities in the Twin Cities region based on race, place, and income, and to think a little bit more about how changes over the last 10 years in our economy might influence those inequities that we see long term, and then to stimulate some discussion about the role that public health can play and that other sectors can play in reducing health inequities. So in Minnesota, we needed to kind of make an argument about health. We kind of pride ourselves in being at the top of many lists, being some of the fittest people in the country. We have cities that are among the top places to live. We rank really high in terms of health care. We're home to the Mayo Clinic. We have a lot of assets. But we don't have to look very deep to start to see some pretty striking disparities in health outcomes. We can look at heart disease. We can look at diabetes. Often it's our populations that are African American and American Indian who have worse health outcomes. And we can see this again and again in a variety of different measures. And those data, just kind of get overlooked if we're just looking at kind of our rankings at a state level. When we talk about disparities in our region and in our work with Blue Cross and Blue Shield, we really shifted from talking about disparities to really focusing on inequities, thinking about that these health outcomes aren't just there and they aren't just, you know, characteristics of different populations. They're systematic, they're avoidable, and they're unjust. And it means that we can take action and we can do something about these inequities that we see. So I know that all of you are here today and you are well familiar with the social determinants of health, but often when I'm talking to other people, it's making sure that we're moving away from just focused on individual behaviors and looking further upstream to the factors that are present in the places where we're born, where we grow, where we live, where we work, and how we age. So these socioeconomic conditions, environmental conditions, the social norms and attitudes that are around us all the time. And we know that these strongly influence health inequities. Again, as I said, we can see inequities in the Twin Cities region and across Minnesota in a variety of places. We have some of the worst gaps between whites and non-whites in the country on different measures, whether we're looking at income or different measures of home ownership or education. And so what we set out to do for the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation is to explore that relationship between place, race, income, and health. And we modeled our work after what's been done here on the Bay Area Health Inequities or Health Inequities Initiative, but to look at things at our local level. We looked at census tract areas in our region and used death records, American Community Survey data, U.S. Census Survey, as well as some other local survey data that I won't be reporting on here, but allowed us to look at some other kind of environmental conditions. And first we looked at differences in life expectancy for different groups of neighborhoods within our region. And what we found when we mapped these out is that life expectancy varies widely across the region. If you're not familiar with the Twin Cities Metro, the areas that are shaded the darkest are the areas that are kind of the more inner city neighborhoods of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's where more of our communities of color live, or where there are higher concentrations of residents of color, where there are higher concentrations of people living in poverty. And when we look at differences in average life expectancy based on different groupings of neighborhoods, we see that there's a social gradient that's present. And this was important to point out in Minnesota, again, because I think we have such high ideals of how well we're all doing in terms of health, just to show that this gradient does exist. And there's about a 7-year difference between average life expectancy for residents living in the neighborhoods with the highest compared to the lowest levels of household income. And I need to pause for a second because I think I've heard enough numbers over the last few days to kind of glance over 7 years. You know, but in 7 years, you know, that's long enough to have children, you know, to, you know, in my life, buy a house and go to 3 different continents and 7 different countries. And 7 years is a lot of life to live. And we have to keep pointing that out, I think. We see similar differences when we look at life expectancy in our area by neighborhoods with different concentrations of poverty levels, as well as by differences in educational attainment. One thing Blue Cross Blue Shield was interested in looking at is whether we're closing this gap in life expectancy. And what we did see when we compared life expectancy by poverty rate is that within the most affluent neighborhoods, life expectancy changed 1.6 years, and there was a larger increase in the more highly concentrated neighborhoods of poverty. Now, there's a lot of limitations in looking at this. I mean, first of all, life expectancy isn't going to continue to increase when people are already living close to or already have a significantly higher life expectancy. And we're looking at groupings of neighborhoods. We're not looking at these same neighborhoods over time or the same residents. But it does potentially tell us that maybe some work is being done to close the gap. We looked at it another way, though, in looking at average or age-adjusted mortality rates by race to see what kinds of differences there are based on race and ethnicity. And what we saw in the Twin Cities Metro, again, is that race and ethnicity certainly do matter to health, and we have very striking disparities, particularly among our American Indian and Black U.S. born population in the Twin Cities. And these racial inequities persist even as we try to adjust for socioeconomic status. They're smaller as we look at neighborhoods with higher levels of income, but they're still there, they're still evident. And so again, we looked at whether or not we're making any gains in closing the gap. And what we saw is that over time, age-adjusted mortality rates have improved for most residents, so fewer people are dying in a year. But that isn't the case for African-American U.S.-born residents in our region. And so maybe changes that have been made aren't impacting all residents equally. So with that kind of background, we also wanted to take a look at what this might mean moving forward. So I'm thinking about how our region is changing and to think a little bit more about particularly looking over the last 10 years and some of the really significant demographic and economic changes in our region, what that might mean to future health. So we did some mapping, and what we've found is that in our region, and I'm sure across the country and in every place where all of you are from, you know, over the last decade, you know, poverty has become more concentrated in some neighborhoods. Household income has certainly decreased, you know, as we've all been dealing with the recession. And we certainly see that in the Twin Cities Metro. And we see that there are more neighborhoods where 20% of residents or more are living in poverty, and that isn't just isolated in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We're seeing more of that in some of the suburbs and in the surrounding communities, as well as more poverty in some of the more rural areas within the region. We also see that our region is becoming more culturally diverse, strikingly so since 2000. We have Minnesota, I think, is thought of as a pretty white place, but we have a lot of new immigrant and refugee groups, including a lot of Southeast Asian residents, a large Somali population, and this trend is just expected to increase over time. And you can see then also that our region is becoming more culturally diverse, not only in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, but in more rural communities. And so we need to do work differently in thinking about how to address racial health inequities across the whole entire region. It isn't just an urban issue. Another key difference is that we're getting older in our region. Well, we're getting older everywhere. But in 2020, for the first time, our population of aging residents age 65 or older is going to outnumber our school-age children, and that has some implications moving forward. And what are those implications? You know, overall, in our state, it looks like health incomes or health outcomes are improving, but some of these gains really might be threatened by recent economic and demographic changes. And the fact that we aren't doing a good job at reducing health inequities does mean that we need to think about some of these changes and how to approach our work a little bit differently. So we certainly see that more residents are living in poverty, and the data that we looked at locally shows that we have a strong relationship between poverty and poorer health outcomes in our region, and that's something that people need to know about and be ready to address. Also, we see that the concentration of poverty is increasing in some neighborhoods, and that has implications on how we think about different kinds of interventions and underlines the fact that we can't just look at individual behavior change, but we need to focus on the socioeconomic factors that are influencing the choices that we make. We see that cultural diversity within our region is increasing, and I think that was incredibly important for our region to know and to keep in mind. We haven't historically done a good job of addressing racial health inequities in our region, and with the changing demographics within not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, but in the suburbs and more rural communities, we have to approach our work differently and not look the other way to some of the racial inequities in our region and look past some of those kind of stellar health rankings that keep us on top of some lists. And finally, the role of the aging population means that, you know, as that population requires more resources to stay in their homes, to do those kinds of things, it means that there's always that battle for funding, and that it's harder and harder to make that argument potentially for more focus on prevention. So what is the role of public health? Well, we've been focusing on four main things that public health and other stakeholders need to do. One is to bring attention to the issue. One is to focus on interventions upstream. Another is to think about building a different kind of infrastructure, and also building the evidence base. So in terms of bringing attention to the issue, I spent a lot of time kind of admiring the problem in Minnesota, and I think we need to move past that. And to be honest, I would prefer not to do this kind of study again, and I would much rather be focused on the amazing work that different community organizations are doing to address these inequities and be able to show that a difference is being made. We need to focus on interventions that are happening upstream. And I know that this can be met with some resistance this time, because in public health, everyone is doing great work, and it's hard to make an argument that, you know, I don't want to take away efforts and energy from this part of my work to only work further upstream. And I think we have to move away from it being an either or to a both and. We do need to build a different infrastructure that focuses on different kinds of partnerships with housing, with job development, a lot of different kinds of partners that I don't think in all areas public health has historically had a relationship with. And we need to build the knowledge base to be able to diffuse knowledge. You know, across our state, there's a lot of different initiatives happening in community, but the infrastructure really isn't there to share as many lessons learned, and we don't need to keep reinventing the wheel. As I've had the opportunity to talk to different audiences about this, I know that one of the things that comes up pretty quickly is, you know, in order to focus on prevention or in order to focus on inequities, it means taking resources away from some group or some region to put into another area. And it becomes suddenly this fight about funding. And the reason that I like this quote and that I'll try to leave it with you today is that I think instead of focusing on leveling out, when we think about improving health outcomes in a region, we're really trying to level up. So we're all working towards the same health outcomes, same ultimate health outcomes, but we do have to do that with an emphasis on closing the gap. And I know that that's why all of you are here today, and that many of you could probably come up here and say the same points. But this has been an important message, I think, to get out within our region into a different stakeholder group who maybe haven't seen this kind of data for the first time, and that mapping some of these differences has been a very powerful way to tell this story. So again, my thanks to those that funded this and also who assisted with the project. And you can certainly feel free to contact me if you have any other questions. Thanks.